It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This weekend's shooting death of an unarmed black teenager by a white Madison police officer sparked protests in the city throughout the weekend. They apparently will continue throughout the week.
As the state's Division of Criminal Investigation examines the case, in accordance with a new state law, activists are calling for justice for Tony Robinson.
We'll talk with Madison's police chief, Mike Colville, in a few minutes. First, we'll check in with WPR's own state government reporter, Sean Johnson. Sean, welcome to the show.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Sean, I understand you've been following Madison Mayor Paul Soglin today and what he has had to say. What have we heard from him on this issue?
Yeah, Mayor Soglin held a pretty somber press conference this morning where he said that this city is in the midst of one of the most tragic episodes in the history of Madison, in his words. And he went on at some length about how this is a bigger societal problem and, you know, not really speaking to the specifics of the incident that happened on Friday or the investigation that's now ongoing. When he was asked if he had any advice for people who are so frustrated with the Robinson incident that they consider taking matter into their own hands or being disruptive, you know, along the lines of what happened in Ferguson, the mayor said, "I'm not sure I have to say anything. This is Madison, Wisconsin, and I've got tremendous faith in the people of this community in leading themselves." He also outlined a couple ways in which Madison had, at least so far, responded better than Ferguson. The mayor said he met personally with Robinson's mother on Friday, and that the police chief had also met with Robinson's grandmother, and that they were trying to emphasize that the tragedy here is, I guess, being felt by the Robinson family, that while there are multiple tragedies going on, and that people in the police department may be mourning as well for their colleague and what he's going through, that they were focusing on the tragedy being felt by the Robinson family. And so that was different than what you'd seen in Ferguson.
And Sean, this is a statewide issue because of a state law on investigations of these police-involved shootings. What did we hear today from the state's Department of Justice?
It is. It's a brand new law, and it is going to be handled here by a brand new Attorney General Brad Schimmel. And he issued a statement today saying that because officer-involved incidents involve considerable resources, they've assigned teams of agents from Department of Justice Division of Criminal Investigation offices around the state, and that they were taking care to avoid tainting the statements of witnesses so that the information that they got from those witnesses, they could be sure was coming from what they knew from the scene or from the incident itself and not from media accounts. And basically what that law requires is that an investigation is conducted by at least two investigators, neither of whom is employed by the law enforcement agency that employs the law enforcement officer that was involved in the officer-involved death. So, I mean, I guess the point is that these are not Madison officers conducting this investigation. And the DOJ statement said that it will be up to Dane County District Attorney Ishmael Azan to review the facts and then to issue a public statement on his conclusions. And it's actually just the role of the DOJ to obtain the facts. So DOJ does the investigation, submits them to the DA, and he reaches a conclusion.
Sean, thanks a lot for joining us today and
You're
following
welcome.
The story. WPR state government reporter Sean Johnson. We'll now go to Craig Spaulding. He is a community activist in Madison. He is at a press conference on this issue. He's the father of one of Tony Robinson's friends. Craig Spaulding, thank you for joining us.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you.
So how are you and your son doing in the aftermath of this tragedy?
We're, pretty stunned and exhausted and grieving. I'm very worried about the kids. This group of kids had just lost their good friend, Jaden McRaven, that's fallen from the building downtown on campus at Christmas time. And so we spent the whole week of Christmas planning that funeral. And now this is just a lot for kids of this age to deal with.
Now, we've heard hundreds, over 1,000 students, high school and college students, demonstrating today at the Capitol, by the city-county building. What do you hope comes out of these protests and the city, the state's response to it?
Well, I was there marching with them, and it was incredibly peaceful. I think by them marching and chanting and singing and being able to get this frustration out in a peaceful way is really, really good. There's starting to be a little bit of dialogue with the police. I can tell you the police, Madison Police Department, are being tremendous in blocking the streets and working with the organizers of the marches. And although this is a pretty organic march, it takes its twists and turns. And I do believe that there's going to be some healing. I don't think there's any fear. There should be any fear of anything happening like what happened in Ferguson and other places, because even number one, this is Madison. There's a lot of love and peace here, and they're getting it out. They're getting their frustration out productively.
As we just heard from Sean Johnson, this investigation is in the hands of an outside agency, not the local city police. Do you get a sense, being involved with these protests, that people have faith that this investigation will tell us what we need to know?
I do not. In fact, I am very close to Anthony and Javier, whose apartment this happened at. And they were detained on Friday night by the Madison Police Department and taken to the police station where the DCI, you know, Division of Criminal Investigation for the State Department of Justice, was. And they held the two boys and questioned them, and we tried to get attorneys for them. I took two attorneys in with me, and they were denied any kind of representation. It makes me a little bit nervous that someone as close, you know, to the Madison Police Department is, I do believe this is a good law. I think it should be more independent than what it is now.
So there's a press conference going on right now. I gather you just stepped away from it to talk to us. What are the key
Correct.
Demands that protesters have from the Madison City Police, Madison City government?
Well, they would like to speak to Chief Colwell. They would like to see the officer put into custody. And they would like to see justice, you know, in an extremely transparent investigation. Those are the main demands right now.
What do you
You know, when the phone call was made back to 911, 911 dispatch was made fully aware that this young man was unarmed. And to have an outcome like this is just incredibly tragic, incredibly tragic.
What do you think needs to be done to rebuild trust between Madison Police and the younger community, especially the younger minority community in the area?
I don't know. It's a good question. There's a lot of rebuilding of trust that needs to take place. They need to work with them, you know, work together in the street. They need to be more transparent than what they are being right now. There's a lot of rebuilding to do, although I think that by allowing these protests to happen, and I do give Chief Colwell a lot of credit for blocking the streets and doing what we have the First Amendment right to do, is going a long way in rebuilding the trust now. The officers are being extremely helpful in allowing these to happen. So, you know, that's a lot. And these kids, I think, also understand that it's not, you know, every cop like this, but they do have an immense fear of walking on the street right now by themselves, whether it's daylight or nighttime.
Craig, thank you for taking the time today, and I'm sorry for
You're
the loss
welcome.
For you and your family.
Thank you very much.
That's Craig Spaulding, a community activist, the father of one of Tony Robinson's friends.
We're continuing our conversation about this weekend's officer-involved shooting in Madison. We just heard from community activist Craig Spaulding.
Now we turn to Madison Police Chief Mike Koval. Due to the ongoing investigation of Tony Robinson's death, we cannot talk about the specifics of the case, but we do want to talk about the police department's approach going forward. Chief Koval, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
So again, knowing that you can't talk about the details of the investigation, but in the absence of information, people might be drawing conclusions about the circumstances behind the shooting, whether it was justified. What do you want to say to people as we wait for the release of more information?
Well, in the interim, as is the case with anybody charged or potentially going to be charged with something in the criminal justice system, it would suggest that we have to wait due process dictates as much as does fundamental fairness. And once DCI has done their comprehensive review, including all the forensics, all the technology dumps, all of the witnesses that may or may not be present, when all of that's said and done, and then they've made their referral over to the DA's office, there's yet a second tier of scrutiny. So I think that if we want to get it right, we can't rush and ensure that we're going to get all the witnesses and all the context that need to be vetted before we can come to a good conclusion.
And Chief Koval, one question that a lot of people seem to be asking as you look on social media and protests and elsewhere, why didn't the officer use a taser instead of a gun? And again, without talking specifically about this case, can you describe for us what goes into an officer's decision, maybe even training, to use lethal versus non-lethal available options?
Well, we start from the predicate that when any time we have an encounter which could involve the use of force, we start from the predicate that the officer should opt for that minimal amount of non-deadly force required in order to affect control of the subject. So the fact that deadly force was employed in this instance means that at some juncture, Officer Kenny, based on the facts, statements, and other considerations of this investigation, is going to have to articulate that he or another was an imminent threat of death or great bodily harm. That is the only justifiable context in which deadly force can be used. So until such time as that is explored, we won't be able to answer that question at this juncture.
You wrote in your blog today that you and your officers are also mourning this weekend's tragedy. You apologized repeatedly in that. How is this incident and the demonstration since then affecting your department right now?
Well, as I also made reference in that blog, is that Madison police officers are seamlessly living and contributing to the livelihood of this entire community. It's not like we've led compartmentalized lives. We also share the range of emotions that do others have. But we also understand that we're in a unique position, that we understand that a lot of these decisions are made in a dynamic that allows for a lot of second guessing. And so we understand that the community is grieving, as are we. And now it's time for us to step up and to show everybody, to demonstrate what we want to be. We don't want to be a legacy of a department that shoots first and asks questions later. We want to be that department which shows our capacity to be engaging, to be relational, to be in our communities and in our neighborhoods, and to be someone that the public can trust. And right now, obviously, we have a trust gap, and we're going to work diligently to forge that gap.
So how do you do that? How do you work to build, restore trust between police and especially the local African-American community going forward?
Well, first of all, it means reaching out to our external stakeholders. I go to meetings. I meet with constituents. Our officers are not recluses. They're not abandoning the neighborhoods or anything like that. In fact, I've encouraged my officers even more so to park the car, to walk the beat, to get into the food court of the malls. Let people understand that we are persons that emerge behind this badge and this gun. We want to show that side of the personalities of what we comprise.
As tragic as this event in and of itself was, it happens in this context of Ferguson, Missouri, and other police-involved shootings around the country. Do you feel like there's even more scrutiny, more of a national microscope on everything you do in this situation?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no escaping the fact that when you put a few variables on the table, namely, you have a young African-American man who is killed at the hands of the police in an encounter which suggests that he was unarmed at the time that he was slain, then whether I like it or not, whether I wish to distinguish myself as completely different from these other episodes, that narrative will land you in the same sort of plight or conundrum that Ferguson and others have found themselves in. That's a theme that has been played out all too often on a national plane. And now, regrettably, we too are a part of that discussion more than ever.
with Ferguson. There was just this Department of Justice report finding endemic racism in the department, very explicitly racist emails going around from police officers, supervisors, people at the courts. Leading up to this shooting here in Madison, some local activists said there is a problem with racism in the Madison Police Department. Do you think that racism is a problem in the police department that needs to be confronted?
Well, I'll tell you that it's certainly not one for which we hire for or you train for. We put conditions in place, costs and benefits for those who would be rogues to would engage in that kind of activity. We're constantly evaluating those processes, those procedures, which may have a de facto or unintended consequence that shows that sort of outcome. So, no, I don't think this is a department that is subject to racism. In fact, I will go back 6-7 years now where we're one of the first departments that actually trained our officers in getting in touch with unconscious bias proclivities, and so that they're aware of those things, and so that their stewards and their coworkers can be aware of those things, so that we can act as guardians not only to the community but towards one another to ensure that those sort of racist outcomes don't occur. So, no, I can't agree with that assessment.
So one contrast many reporters have made, both within Wisconsin and beyond, is between the handling of protests in Ferguson and here in Madison. What are your priorities as these protests, starting Friday night, going on through this week? What is your priority as a police chief?
Well, to take seriously our constitutional oath, mainly being we are there to protect constitutional rights and individual liberties. One of the most cherished in our country is the First Amendment, that right of assembly and free speech. So to that extent, we take very, very strongly the opportunity to show how good we can do in this context. We want to foster and facilitate those protests. Now, to the extent that we can, we will, and we will do everything in our power to make that a win-win proposition. The only thing that would, again, vitiate that objective is if people engage in wrongful conduct in the course of doing that. But in the most part, we have cut a wide berth in terms of facilitating parades and demonstrations and rallies to take place.
I believe one of the demands of the protests outside the city county building was to hear from Mayor Soglin. He came out and spoke, and to hear from you. Would you come out and address protesters at some point? Do you feel that that would be appropriate?
Well, it depends on those circumstances. So, for example, last night I was present during the vigil, but quite frankly, I took a role on the outer rim because I don't think that I should be or the police should be the object of a lot of these gatherings right now. We don't even have the capacity to say that Tony Robinson's been returned to his family for a proper, respectful opportunity to bury their young man. So I really don't think that the police ought to be the object of any focus right now. I think the community is rightfully focused on being respectful to this family and their needs.
And you, with Michael Johnson, from a local organization, had met with the members of the community and members of the family. What was that like?
Well, of course, it's very difficult. I was able to go with Michael to meet with Tony's grandmother and grandfather, and frankly, I was delighted that they would even have me just literally hours after the death of their son. To their credit, they were angry. Very, very angry, very, very, very touched by their loss. They did most of the talking, and I did most of the listening. But to their credit, at the end of it all, I couldn't be more gratified that they were at least willing to let me make my public apology to them as a family. I asked also that I be able to extend that to Tony's mom inside the house where we were staging, and obviously they felt that that would be too overwhelming, and I totally get that, totally respect that, and that's why I've used other platforms like the media, like opportunities like this or the blog to suggest what a tremendous sense of loss that I would have felt as well, since I have two adult sons, and I can't even imagine trying to get my hands around the thought that they wouldn't be coming home.
Heard earlier what you were hoping to see from the community. What are you telling your officers at what must be a tense time for them?
It is a tense time for them, and I'm asking them not only to be as good they are, but I'm asking them to now be great, to show this community, to show, frankly, our nation, how we can do things differently in Madison to lead to a more constructive, to a more reconciliatory process of healing. But it means that we can't go into hiding or recluse, as we've seen in some departments, where you only respond to calls for service, service the call, and get back into your car. Quite the contrary, I've asked my officers to park the car, get out and walk, get out and be visible, have those courageous conversations as people would allow. Go to the food court, go to the schools, play a game of horse on the basketball court. We need to show that we are members of the community as well. We're seamlessly interreliant and interdependent on one another, and we want to be able to come back to the discussion of ideas and to work with them as our partners in moving towards better community policing.
Chief Koval, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for the opportunity. Have a great day.
You too. That's Madison Police Chief Mike Koval talking with us about how his police department is moving forward following the officer-involved death of Tony Robinson.